we had witnessed, you know, the bonds our mothers formed with other military spouses. And so that's still, you know, when we read the Iliad, it felt so timeless, those ideas. And so we thought, you know, when we were thinking about telling the story of the classic story of the Trojan War in our own way, we always wondered, what were those women doing behind the walls of Troy during a war that lasted 10 years? Because we knew from our own life experiences that, you know, they were doing something.
Welcome to Historical Fiction Unpacked. I'm your host, Allison Treat. Hello, readers, and welcome back to the show. This is episode 13 of season 7, and today I'm talking to a two-person author team called A.D. Rhine. It's made up of really good friends, Ashley Coles and Danielle Stinson. They met on an army base when they were kids, and they ended up writing books together as adults. So I'm so excited to share this conversation with them. They're going to tell us all about their friendship and how it grew into a partnership, and also the books that they have written. So I'm going to get right to that conversation, but make sure you stick around after the interview because I have an important announcement I'm going to make at the end of the show. So until then, here is my conversation with A.D. Rhine. A.D. Rhine, also known as Ashley Cowles and Danielle Stinson, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having us, Allison.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. It's great to have you here. So the two of you wrote a historical duology together, Horses of Fire, released in July of last year, and the companion novel, Daughters of Bronze, is coming out this summer. Can you tell me about these books?
Absolutely. So Horses of Fire is our epic historical of the Trojan War, in which Troy's misunderstood and courageous women take center stage. We have Andromache, our Amazon princess. We have Rhea, our horse whisperer refugee turned Trojan spy, and Helen, the name that everybody has heard, but who nobody really knows. And with these women, they take us behind the walls of Troy during the actual war, the events that Holmes describes, in a way that hasn't been done before. We really wanted them to show how their actions, the actions of the women of Troy, they weren't just spectators to the events, but their agency and their choices affected the story, the outcome of the story that ultimately left them out. And so that is Horses of Fire and Daughters of Bronze, which it actually, they switched us. They were now coming out in November of this year, right before Christmas. but Daughters of Bronze continues the story. And though it is a duology, we try to write it so that if you did pick up Daughters of Bronze before Horses of Fire, you hopefully would not be lost. Though we recommend, obviously, Horses of Fire first. But in Daughters of Bronze, Andromache, Rhea, Helen, and this time also Cassandra, pool their powers and their strengths to protect Troy and all the people that they love from their enemies inside and outside the walls of Troy. And we wanted to show how their actions and their courage changes the story in unexpected ways. We've got some forbidden love. We've got epic love. We've got some battle scenes, some espionage, hopefully a little something for everybody. Sort of Game of Thrones meets Outlander vibes.
Oh, wow. That's cool. In your author letter, you say that Horses of Fire is an ode to our belief that sisterhood is strength and that some of the most of the profoundest acts of bravery and heroism are those that go unnoticed. So I love this so much. It's amazing. Can you tell me what inspired you to write this story?
Yeah, well, we've been friends, best friends for 20 years. We met on a U.S. Army base in Germany when we were 15. Where we bonded over our shared love of epic novels like The Lord of the Rings and our love for, you know, all the kind of epic historical war movies that came out in the late 90s. So, you know, like the Braveheart, the Gladiator films.
Yeah.
And we also shared a love of Homer's epic poem, The Iliad. Danielle's dad read it to her when she was in the womb. And I read and discussed the whole poem with freshmen over the course of an entire semester when I taught high school. And that was like by far my favorite teaching experience ever.
Wow.
After we began writing and publishing YA novels individually, we started thinking about the possibility of writing a story together. And this was always going to be the story. And we thought we had a unique take, which you kind of referenced, referring to our letter.
Yeah.
Because as the daughters of soldiers, and in Danielle's case, the wife of a soldier, we felt like we really know what it's like to hold down the home front during a war. And we had witnessed, you know, the bonds our mothers formed with other military spouses. And so that still, you know, when we read the Iliad, that it felt so timeless, those ideas. And so we thought, you know, when we were thinking about telling the story of the classic story of the Trojan War in our own way, we always wondered, what were those women doing behind the walls of Troy during a war that lasted 10 years? Because we knew from our own life experiences that, you know, they were doing something.
Right. Sure. Okay. So why did you decide to, and I want to get back more and talk about your relationship with each other a little later in the conversation, but just first about the novels themselves, why did you decide to approach the story of the Trojan War as historical fiction instead of mythology or fantasy?
That's such a good question. And there are a lot of reasons to this, but as Ashley already mentioned, the thing that always struck us about the story was not the gods. It wasn't, you know, who was doing this or pretending to be this. It was the people. The best lines in the Iliad, those moments that you don't forget are all between the people. And we really wanted to center to the people, especially the women that were there, but completely written out of the story. The other reason we really wanted to view it as historical is because this is a classic example of the victors write history and determine what the narrative is. So the Greeks, you know, spoiler alert, in our version, you know, we will take liberties in some places, but the Greeks ultimately win. They take Troy.
Right.
And the story of the Iliad, which is based on what we think real events that happened during the Late Bronze Age. We have a site, we have everything, like, this really happened. And it was written down by Homer hundreds of years actually after the events occurred. So he was a Greek writing hundreds of years later, and he told the story his way. And, you know, he told it as if everybody was Greek, as if they all had the same gods, as if all these things were happening. We thought to ourselves, like, that can't be how it is. And that's where we started to really look at it as historical and say, who are these people? Who are the Trojans? What would their society have been like? Like, why would this war have actually been fought? Because, spoiler alert, you know, we didn't believe that because one woman was so beautiful that these two, you know, civilizations would have gone to war. It feels like a little bit of an easy way out. It feels like something we've seen before again and again. And so we thought, nope, we're gonna see what we can discover, what this might actually have been based on. And that's sort of why we decided to go historical.
Cool. So how did you approach research for this then?
I mean,
there was a lot.
Yeah, there was a lot. I mean, that's what's interesting is the, you know, we're learning more and more about the Bronze Age through archaeological discoveries. And as Danielle mentioned, there's a site believed to be the ancient site of Troy in Turkey. And so we, you know, got into a lot of the archaeological findings. But the great thing is there is still that gap that historical novelists love where there's a lot of theory, not. As if when you're writing a World War II novel, everything is documented. So there's a lot of room to play. But, you know, we definitely looked at kind of the wider geopolitics of that time of because basically what happened is at the end of the Bronze Age, all of these, you know, once thriving civilizations kind of collapsed all at the same time. And, you know, kind of Troy is often seen, you know, the war that probably inspired the Iliad is often seen as one of those events that was kind of the beginning of that fall of civilizations. And so we really wanted to kind of look at it through that lens of, oh, this wasn't just about one city, but about kind of this larger landscape of, you know, whether it was climate change or there's talk about, you know, the sea peoples, this group of kind of seafaring raiders who attacked Egypt and all these other cities of the Late Bronze Age. And so we really wanted to kind of zoom out and incorporate some of those elements, which you see much more of in Daughters of Bronze, the second book. Okay. But Yeah, so we definitely took a look at a lot of the archaeology and then asked a lot of what-if questions about some of the different historical theories. And I'm sure Danielle has some things to add.
It's just, and you don't even have to be a super nerd like we are to realize how cool some of this stuff is. Like these are the Luwians, the Hittites, all these names of civilizations of people that lived in Anatolia at this time. They were lost until just recently. And these are legitimate, these civilizations that held so much power, we've completely forgotten about them until just now. And so being able to dive in and discover like some of their sites, talk about like their the written records that the Hittites left behind, these things are just fascinating because they show a lot about the things that we do not know about the past that we think that we know so well, such as the role of women in some of these societies. We'd like to think that we are, you know, super advanced now and we've come a long way, but there were times in the past, like for the Hittites, their queens ruled on par, we believe, with their men, the kings and the queens. So there's so many little things like that. And so when we wrote Andromache in particular, we wanted to write her as the type of leader that was possible for that time, which does not really fit the stereotypical, idea of what we've, you know, been taught. And so things like that were really interesting to us.
Hmm. Wow, that's cool. So now let's dive into this, the friendship, the partnership between you two. First talk about your friendship. Like how, I mean, you mentioned that you met on a military base and, but how did you become friends and what has that meant to you over the years?
Well, very simply, we became friends on the soccer field. So we both played soccer throughout high school. And what's great about growing up on having your adolescence on a military base overseas is that when you play soccer, you don't play against, like, there's not very many American high schools. So you have to travel to England and to Belgium and to Italy to play other American military schools. So I think that definitely, you know, fostered our love of travel and our interest in history. From a pretty young age. And we both had to, our dads are both stationed back in the United States on the eve of our senior year, which happened to be right before 9/11. So, you know, big events were coming for us towards the end of high school with just our families. And it was, I think we were both pretty upset about that. It was not a happy time. We had a great group of friends by the end of our junior years of high school. So it was a tough transition, but we kept in touch. We went to college on opposite coast. I went to California. Danielle went to Boston. So we kept in touch and throughout the years, you know, through motherhood, having very young children during COVID, which is actually when we decided to start working on this project, because, you know, if we felt like we could identify with the women trapped behind the walls of Troy as we're, trying to do distant learning. And I had a newborn during that time. So it felt we were in the right headspace.
Yeah. She's my person. We've always called each other first. We've lived together for a glorious year in Durham, North Carolina. Can't forget about that. We started writing at the same time. We've always been each other's first readers, always been each other's hype women. Like it goes back. We have notes that we wrote to each other in seventh grade. So when we say that we are intimately familiar with each other's thoughts and each other's writing, there is no other person that probably could knows it the way that, you know, Ashley knows how I think. And so it was just natural that we would someday come together to do it.
That's awesome. I love that. When did you first think of writing a book together? Who mentioned it first? And how did it eventually become a reality?
I don't know if we remember the moment, but it was like we were late teens.
I know.
We were really.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things we talked about for a long time. But I think we had to kind of go through a lot of life experiences, because one of the unique things about our story is we have women at kind of different seasons of life, different ages. So Rhea's, you know, a late teen. we kind of realized that Helen would actually be like in her late 30s, early 40s at this time, possibly, just based on how old her daughter is. And it's been 10 years of the war. So I think that was a big part of it, too, is we had to kind of get to a place like where we had gotten married, had become mothers, had all these different life experiences that we wanted to infuse with these four different women. And then, you know, I think, honestly, like a lot of the things in the media, was probably when it started to become more concrete, just seeing different images of the different conflicts and just seeing how it affected women and children, like those, you know, as those moments have become more and more frequent over the last like 6 or 7 years, that I think lit a spark, just this sense of like a mother's desire to protect their children. And that became, again, a much bigger theme in the second book than in the first. But I think that was really like a driving force behind like, now is the time for us to finally write this.
Yeah. Okay. And as we were driving around in our respective cars for like a decade, you know, with children screaming in the background, like this is how we centered ourselves. It's like just daydreaming. And, you know, we always had it. We were building it slowly. So when it came time to sit down and to do it, we were ready.
And it was actually really fast for how big these books are. Oh, wow. It was a pretty, we wrote them, I think, in a year. So both of them. So it was, because we had been mulling it over for a decade. So.
Wow, that's great. So you each have written things on your own, though. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about your solo careers, just, you know, briefly describe where you've gone?
I published, my debut was a science fiction young adult from Macmillan in 2019. And so I write more science fiction fantasy on my own. Okay. And Ashley, you can speak to yours.
Yeah. I have a contemporary young adult novel and then a kind of a dual timeline historical contemporary novel that takes place on the Titanic, actually. Okay. I've always been a big historical fiction. That's my genre. And so what was cool about this project is we really blended our strengths, I think. You know, I'm the history nerd, Danielle's the political science geek, and she, you know, is really good at kind of the fantasy epic world building, the scope, the lots of really compelling secondary characters. I like to really go deep with kind of like the mindset of the people of the day, like what they thought and believed, and really, you know, kind of tap into not just the historical period, but like how people thought at different times in history. So I think, yeah, this project is kind of us bringing our strengths and interests together.
That's cool. That's great. So then what was it like to write together? I mean, obviously you said it went fast and you each brought your strengths to it, but how did you work out the logistics? Like, did you both research? Did you both draft? Did you take different sections, or how did you put it all together?
Hmm. Yeah. So there's what we thought was going to happen and then what actually happened. So we probably write, and we've actually given some work, taught some workshops on co-writing. And the truth is it's going to be different for everybody. But with us, because of our relationship and because of the fact that we are so familiar with each other's writing, each other's voices, we really, really kind of got messy. It got real, real messy. And so we created voices. We each created two voices, but based on time and based on things that we were doing, some of the things are like very identifiable. I'm like, oh, that was Ashley or that was me. And then there's a lot of places where our words are layered like bricks. And it feels like it was something like you were really, really making art with somebody else. And the thing that was so special about that is it really does feel like the sum is greater than the parts. And we went places and it was hard sometimes, and it can be difficult even if you're writing with somebody that, you know, you absolutely love. It's one of your favorite person. Like, writing is very intimate. It's very personal and it's vulnerable. And we But if you're willing to go there, like the result is something that I don't think we could have achieved individually. And so we're really proud of that. And there was something about writing and doing this thing that you read alone or you write alone, but when you're doing it with somebody, it takes it to a different level. It makes it rewarding in a way that I had not personally felt before.
Cool. How did you come up with your pseudonym, A.D. Ryan?
Our names, Ashley and Danielle, for the A and the D, and then we wanted an ode to where we met. So we met in Germany. So we the Rhine River. So that's how we came up with it. And it felt very historical as well.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned in some of our correspondence ahead of time that books, especially historical fiction, shaped you when you were children and also helped you overcome some of the challenges of military life. Can you talk more about that and how that, what exactly that looked like?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned historical fiction. That's been my first love as a reader, since childhood. And I definitely identified with a lot of classics like, Island of the Blue Dolphin, Anne of Green Gables, the Little House books, I think made an impact because I was like, oh, I'm from a family of three girls and our dad's job takes us all around the United States and the world. So made some probably subconscious connections there. Historical fiction has always been what I wanted to write. I love how you can, you have some plot to go off of and build the story around, and those restraints I actually find really liberating and that they like encourage creativity rather than stifle it. I think,
wow.
Having, when you move constantly, like I moved, I think 8 times by the time I was 18, books, I remember when I went away to college, I had like no possessions I really cared about, but I had a box of books from my childhood, which actually got lost in a later move, which I'm still like heartbroken about. But that was like the thing I cared like my parents were like, oh, we're going to get rid of your stuff if you're not coming back for it. I was like, just don't get rid of my box of books. I think it's something that we both found solace in reading, as kind of more introverted kids who are constantly the new kid. And it definitely has shaped, my love of looking for kind of the gaps in history, the people who fall between the recorded lines, and kind of the underdogs. Like that's, I think we both have a passion for telling those kinds of stories, but I'll let Danielle speak to that if she wants.
Yeah, I know everything Ashley just said. And also I think like for me growing up, moving almost every year, I mean, I spent most of my early life in Europe. My parents always put me in whatever schools we were. So if I was in Germany, I was going to German school. If I was going to Italy, if I was in Italy, I was going to Italian school. And so having to learn and to be like, books really saved me. And they were also how I learned the languages and the cultures that were around me. I've always loved historical fiction and fantasy. These are the novels that my dad and my mom, who are both readers, put in my hands. Like I remember reading Mishner when I was really young and, Stein and all these things that really spoke to me. Cause I think what I saw in these books is that there are certain things that tie people together across time, across cultures, across distance. And it really led to my belief that there are things that unify us that remain true. And that's what why historical I feel is so powerful and important, because when we're reading about other people's, other places, other times, I think the whole point of the exercise is to look at things, not in a way that we're judging it, but to see ourselves and our weaknesses and our strengths and the things that could be, it could be again, so that we're able to learn, not because we're better, but because we know that the same things make up all of us. And so there's something really cautionary about that, but also hopeful, because the past is full of, some very tragic things, but it's also full of moments of incredible bravery and heroism, things that we could aspire to.
Right. Yeah. So you also mentioned that writing fiction as adults has helped you process historical events of the past and current events that you've lived through. Can you share more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I referenced it a little bit, kind of like what the spark was. You know, I think just very tragically, like witnessing school shootings, and just as parents of young elementary school children, like not knowing how to even to begin to think about living in that kind of world. And then thinking about, you know, as we're reflecting on the world of Troy, like what would you do if you are living in this city and you know that, you know, when the Greeks come in, every male child will be slaughtered, like no matter how young. Every girl will be sold into slavery for the rest of her life. Like, I think, you know, it's very heavy stuff, but I think we can look back at things that happened in the ancient world and be like, wow, that was really horrible. Glad it doesn't happen now. But I think, you know, those fears and emotions are constant. Like we still, like Danielle was saying, there's more that unifies us with people across history than divides us. And kind of the same, you know, just the withdrawal from Afghanistan, seeing mothers trying to lift their infant to an American soldier to get them out because they know the Taliban's going to take over again. Like those kind of searing images, I think you see them in every single war that has ever existed in human history.
Right.
Yeah. Sadly, war is endemic. Yeah. It's something that happens again and again. You look in the Middle East or even now in continental Europe, like there is plenty for us to look at and to see. And I think what was always important to us as people who are caught up, as kids that were caught up in some of these events, is to realize that like history is in itself a sort of fiction because it's always written by somebody and they're always going to be telling it a specific way. And that's just part of it. But when we read things, we have to look at it and think about all the different sides to the story that there could be, probably as many sides as there are people that witnessed it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to keep in mind also that like wars and these things that happen are not the people that are in them. It's like a beautiful example of this is Kristen Hannah's book, The Women, where she's showing you how the war is not the warrior. And I think that that's also something that we are drawn to that we think is an important aspect, is you can see that people are just people behaving and acting in the circumstances in which they find themselves. And yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So do you want to share any other things about the upcoming book, Daughters of Bronze?
By the time that this podcast comes out, we should have a cover available to see.
Great.
Which we're very excited to share. And it's up for review on NetGalley. So even though it's a ways off, you can, you know, the ARCs are making their way into the world. And we are just so excited about this book because we've loved these women like they were real for a very long time. And we really wanted to give them an ending that was their own, that had a note of light, not just dark, and an honor to their strength and their courage. And that is our hope that we were able to do it.
Hopefully. Yeah. And one of the things about, this story is the second book is this is where we really get into the kind of touch point. For those who are familiar with the Iliad, like the big moments of the story, Horses of Fire was more kind of like the lead up to that because we thought it's a 10-year war. Like surely things were in Homer's poem starts at the end of the war, the last year. And so we kind of wanted to show some of the lead up to the events that people know. And this is where this book, Daughters of Bronze, is where we really get into those events. So I think it'll be fun for readers who are familiar with the story to see some things they think they, you know, they know, but then to see how we portray it in a different way because we're showing it from a completely different perspective. So we're really excited about that.
Right. That's great. What are you working on anything in the future together, do you think?
Yes.
Are you?
We are working on something that we're a little bit obsessed with right now, but we'll see. Yes.
You can't say anything about it, right?
Not yet. I'll just say it gets even closer to our personal history.
Okay.
Yes.
Good clue. This is why.
That's great.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So you really kind of touched on this already, but I'm wondering if you have any more thoughts about this, because I have a question that I ask all my guests. How do you think learning about history through story helps us approach life in the present?
I always, and it's funny because Danielle kind of touched on this a little bit too, which is why we work so well together. but I always, you know, think of what the author and medievalist C.S. Lewis wrote about chronological snobbery, is the term he used, you know, where we look back at people at the past, especially, you know, the further back we go and assume that, you know, we're inherently smarter than they were, or, you know, we look at kind of the technological progress that we've made and that we can see across history, and then, you know, maybe assume that it automatically applies to our moral progress as well as human beings. And so, you know, I think that's one of the ways truly learning about history can help us live better today is kind of, as you've been saying, we start to see the things that are pretty universal about human nature, the things that we share with people of the past, the ways where, you know, every generation has challenges and choices, you know, where they can act for good, can act for evil, that those things don't really change generation to generation. And I think, you know, studying history helps us, you know, both stay humble, but also, you know, hopefully more honest about what it means to be human and kind of those things that are constant throughout time.
Yeah. And I just think in this current time when information is so in our face all the time, and yet it also manages to be very pointed and directed and cultivated based on algorithms or whatever's going on that I don't understand. Right. I think it's really important we can look at the past, at events that have happened, and see how much disagreement there is just about things that have already happened and that nobody has the full sense of the truth. I think we should be able to approach things in our own history and our events as they're unfolding with an idea of being open-minded and gathering as much information as we can and always thinking for ourselves. And that is something that I think the past teaches us, that you have to dive deep and you have to make an effort. And you have to realize that as soon as you think you have a full grasp of the truth, you're probably stepping wrong.
Yeah. Things are complicated. People are complicated.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That is a great point. Ashley and Danielle, this has been a wonderful conversation. Really, really so intriguing. What is the best way for listeners to follow both of you as AD Ryan and each of you separately?
Yeah, well, we have a website, adryan.com, and we have some bonus goodies there. When readers join we have a free book club, and it's just, you know, a monthly email update where we give away a novel we've been loving to one of our members. And it was actually The Women by Krista Hanna that Danielle mentioned. That was last month's giveaway. And then we're, you know, pretty active on Instagram and TikTok at adryanauthor. And, you know, like Danielle mentioned, our cover reveal is April 1st. So this should be out after that. So, that cover will be posted on Instagram, and it's gorgeous. So we're very excited to share it. And then we each, also have Instagram and websites and everything just under our own names, Ashley Coles and Danielle Stinson.
Okay, great. Did you want to say anything else, Danielle, or did Ashley cover it?
Nope, but we're just, you know, come find us. We like interacting with people. You know, it's fun. The book community is nice, and it's always great interacting with readers in particular.
Yeah.
And other people that are nerds about the same thing that we're nerds about.
Right.
Really makes you feel like you're not alone.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Allison. It was great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I thought it was really fascinating and lots of fun. So make sure you go to the show notes to find out more about A.D. Ryan, to get links to their books and their websites and all that good stuff. You can find the show notes either in your podcatcher app or online at alisontreat.com/blog. That's alisontreat.com/blog. If you want to help the show, you can do that by following us, by leaving a review, by subscribing to our podcast, and also by sharing this episode with someone. But now we come to the important announcement that I mentioned before. If you are on my newsletter list and you opened the newsletter I sent yesterday, then you already know my news. I am discontinuing Historical Fiction Unpacked. This is one of the very last episodes. I believe next week will be our last episode, unless I just decide to do a closing episode, a closing solo episode in 2 weeks. I explained in my newsletter kind of what led me to this decision to get off the hamster wheel of trying to build my platform, striving for publishing success. Right now, I just need to take a step back and I need to spend more time with my family. I need to focus on the things that I think God wants me to focus on with my work and with my life. If you want to read more of a description of why I came to this place, then please shoot me an email, alison@alisontreat.com, and I will be happy to share my story from my newsletter with you. And you know, and also I'm just happy to converse or to correspond about what led me to this decision. I'm sad about it, but I'm okay with it because I know that I'm going to be focusing on the things I need to put my time and energy into right now at this stage of life. So with that said, I would like to share an appropriate quote from Homer's Iliad. "Let me not then die ingloriously and without a struggle, but let me first do some great thing that shall be told among men hereafter." So my friends, go and do that great thing and keep reading historical fiction. I will talk to you again next week.